Welcome to Cabronas y Chingonas, a podcast where we talk about queer and Latinx topics such as
Estela from Real Women Have Curves. Like, she was such a minor character, but honestly, like, every bit of, like, every moment I can, like, justify in a gay way. You know what I mean?
She was like a iconic soft butch the whole movie. It was lit.
Honestly, yeah, like, and she doesn't express, like, any interest in men. She doesn't express any, like, regret that she's not getting married. You know what I mean? She's just like, I don't give a fuck, man. I have a business to run. I'm a woman.
She's a boss-ass bitch. Yeah,
and she only works with women. No interest in men. Like, queer icon. Could have been
You're right. I saw, like, no dudes ever.
Yeah. I really like that about this film. Corona.
What's poppin', chingona? How you been?
Drinking my Dos Equis beer with my Dos Equis shirt and my Dos Equis household.
That's all she drinks, guys. And this is like a really like classic shirt. It's like, what is this? Like a vintage Dos Equis shirt?
It's vintage. Yeah, I got it at a thrift store.
Shout out to thrifting, dude. Bruh. Best way to shop. So, dude, there's been so much happening. Like, Selena weekend was this past weekend in Dallas. By the time this comes out,
oh, yeah. Like, and I mean, really, in general.
I mean, it's always Selena week in general, Dallas, right? Yeah. Like, there's, like, a new mural outside of, like, Top 10 Records. There's, like if you hung out with De Colores and did the 214 Selena thing this weekend, it was litty. Like, oh, Maita, it was awesome. Like, it was so beautiful, honestly. I recently rewatched it at Texas Theater with De Colores, and, like, I legit was feeling very queer and very happy.
Yeah, I was really sad to miss it because I, you know, I love Selena. I've loved Selena from like forever. And when I found out about De Colores' special connection to Selena, I like tripped balls.
Oh no, dude. Like, I saw Rafa and I was like, oh my God, I'm in the midst of a celebrity. And it was really cool. I was just like, oh, like I gave him a hug and I was like, this is really special to you, you know, and it's really special to all of us. So it was very, it warmed my heart, honestly, to like see him and to see this movie again. Dude, also, like, Selena going through this whole, like, you know, amor prohibido, like, thing with her boyfriend, like, same. I think all queer people can, like, relate to that.
Yeah, yeah, to an extent, for sure. I mean, what else have you been up to?
Just, like, working out. Like, my burpees. Okay, guys, my burpees. I can now do 10 of them without dying. Shout out to that.
You just knock them out like out of nowhere.
I can do like 10 right now if you ask me. I don't want to, but I can, so that's the good part. But yeah,
I'm not gonna make you do that.
Thank you,
especially since you're drinking liquor.
Yeah. This fucking rum. And happy April Jesus Day. Or what, Jesus Fool's,
yeah,
Day?
Today's April Fool's, and we told
it's Jesus Fool's Day.
Yeah, it's like the ultimate holiday because Jesus was like, oh, I'm dead, guys. And then psych. Like April Fool's comes up and he's like, just kidding. got you.
It's the perfect day for Jesus to come back, honestly. So
no, but yeah.
Happy motherfucking Easter if you like celebrate that shit. And if not, then just happy April Fool's Day. Like,
happy April, I guess. Like, it's springtime. It's allergy season.
Hey, what up to them?
That's pretty fucking gross.
That, them coughing and them sneezing, y'all. Shout out to that. Yeah, dude, it's going to be sucking for me in the next couple of days. So, next couple of months.
Oh, yeah. Dude, like, I just read a tweet saying that, like, Las Vegas is particularly full of pollen right now. And I'm going to Las Vegas when this episode comes out, like, I'll be going that night, so Thursday night.
Woo!
And, like, I know, I'm excited, but also, like, pollen and, like, you know, here in LA right now, like, I can wear a sweater every day, like, it's nice weather. But over there, I know I'm gonna be, like, sweating balls.
You'll be fine, dude. Like, the pollen in Dallas is just as crazy, so you're just gonna be the same. But I forget, you, like, yeah, you still, like,
I don't
LA
want
now
to be. I'm used to, like, perfect weather, well, except for like it can be bipolar sometimes, but yeah,
shout out to LA weather. I'm so jealous, but keep it.
And shout out to Klexicon.
Oh yes.
Like, if you guys are going like please hit me up. Like, let's meet, let's talk or whatever. I'm going to be at, like, as many panels as I can. Just found out that Stephanie Beatrice is going to be there from Brooklyn Nine-Nine.
Swoon.
Bisexual Latina woman. Mm-hmm. Like, she's absolutely fantastic. So I certainly hope that I get some time in the press room with her. And if I do, I will get that audio to all of you as soon as I can.
Oh, my God. I'm crossing my fingers. I hope you do it. That would be awesome.
Samesies, samesies.
Okay. Yeah. So today, what are we covering?
Today, and quick shout out to Brenda from Tamarindo, yes, who kind of suggested this like a while back when we talked. We were talking about Lady Bird because I had just seen it. And I was like talking to her about how I hadn't seen Real Women Have Curves, like, or maybe I had seen it and like I hadn't seen it in a really long time. But the point was that people were saying like, hey, Lady Bird ripped off, you know, Real Women Have Curves. And I like texted Fred Babita and I'm like, okay, investigation mode. Like, let's find out what the real deal is.
Instigation mode. That's fact, though.
So we both watched Lady Bird. We both watched Real Women Have Curves. And we're going to like see what the deal is, see what the differences are, see what the similarities are. I mean, they were released like 15, 16 years apart.
But they're about the same year, actually. They're about the same year. They're both about 2002.
They're based in the same time period. And they're both in California, mm-hmm, right?
Yep. One's Sacramento. Well,
one is North California. LA.
One's East South. LA, excuse me.
Yeah. East LA, so, and then the other one's like NoCal, North California.
NoCal. I mean, you know, another thing I really wanted to talk about was why people were pitting the two together. You know, like, that's a really interesting concept to me because they are very separate, different films, you know? Like,
a lot of people think that it's like, it's the same story. It's just from a different perspective. It's like It's a white woman who's like, you know, has a Catholic family, and a Latina who is like, you know, she's curvy, she has curves, and she's a Latina, and then it's through her lens, you know what I mean? Like, it's like the same story, but through different, completely different people.
You know, and that's the thing, though. I don't actually think they're like, I think they are similar concepts. I think Lady Bird is talking about a mother and a daughter, and Real Women Have Curves is also talking about a mother and a daughter, but I think they're saying and doing different things, and they're using different tools and coming from different perspectives, and like, I think we're losing the beauty of both of them when we compare them, like, because, you know, if we try to say that Real Women Have Curves is more relatable, you're assuming that everyone's Latino experience was the same, that it's monogamous, when I don't actually think anyone's Latino experience is going to be, you know, this monogamous experience. This just, it's not going to be the same, you know? And I don't, no shade to either of these movies, but, you know, neither of them were I found that relatable completely, you know, in the way that people look for representation. I don't know, I could be alone, but what do you think?
Well, yeah, no, of course, I don't think either of these were going to be relatable to either of us because they're, you know, they're about straight women, you know what I mean?
Exactly.
For me, I fell into Real Women Have Curves a lot more, I will say, because, you know, I had a mom like that. Mm-hmm. I've been big my entire life, not just recently, like always, you know, mm-hmm, what I mean? So I definitely related a lot more to Real Women Have Curves, like a lot more. But yeah, it still wasn't all encompassing and I didn't expect it to be.
Yeah. And then another thing that I thought of was that when people were putting them side by side and saying, oh, well, it's just a ripoff. And the longer I thought about it, the more I was just kind of like, I think the real issue and I think the real thing that needs to be discussed is why is one nominated for an Oscar and the other wasn't? I mean, I get it that the times have changed, that it is now 2018, you know, this movie is made in 2017, and I understand that this movie was from 2002 with Real Women Have Curves, but I think the problem is the audience itself. I think the problem is that one is being halted as, you know, cinematic, you know, gold versus one that people don't even know it exists. So I think the problem is with the audience and how they experience it and relate to it. And I think the problem is the people who watch the movie who can't seem to relate to Real Women Have Curves, because I can relate to Lady Bird in the same way that I can relate to Real Women Have Curves. So I think that's my whole spiel on is, like, I don't understand why we have to pit them against each other when people can just applaud both.
I think that audiences did see in Real Women Have Curves what they saw in Lady Bird. I think that the problem was more what you were saying is, like, back then, back in the early 2000s, the Academy wasn't really looking at movies like this. And maybe now today, maybe they would have. Maybe if this had come out right now, it would have gotten some attention. But that honestly, that's kind of a long shot too. So I definitely think audiences can understand, even white audiences can see Real Women Have Curves, like, for its value. I just think that it wasn't looked at back then, you know. Yeah, what I mean?
And that's the problem. For sure. Not so much that we should be pitting two stories and two filmmakers against each other. I think it's the audience itself that needs to, and it's not even us. It's not our audience. I'm talking about, you know, the 53% white women. I'm talking about white men. I'm talking about the other. And it's like, at the same time, like, when we were talking about the Oscars, why do we need, like, white validation, you know? At the same time, like, why do we so want white validation to be in the Oscars, yet at the same time, you know, we want to pit these two stories together? And I just don't, I don't see it, you know?
It's definitely complicated. Well, yeah, we're making all these arguments and we haven't even told everybody what the stories are about. So let's get into it, and then, like, we'll kind of have our assessments afterwards, and you guys can agree or disagree with us. I'd love to hear it.
For sure. Okay, so I am covering Lady Bird. Yeah, the problematic fave for a lot of people. And, you know, this movie is about a mediocre white girl being mediocre and believing herself not to be. this little white girl named Christine, who is given herself the name Lady Bird, and she's kind of trying to assert her identity in high school and kind of assert her identity away from her, like, family. She's living in Sacramento. She's a senior in high school. She's kind of like a Claire Danes, like, theater geek, you know? She has, like, pink hair. She's renamed herself Lady Bird. She's doing theater. She's extremely ambitious and has a lot of self-esteem, which I think is something only white women can really possess and still be mediocre, because this girl is not making A's. She's constantly being told by people, like, girl, you're little, you know, you are way out there. And, you know, she has this kind of, like, annoying teenage ambition. But, again, this is a mediocre white girl being mediocre. But the beauty of this movie doesn't lie in her mediocrity. It lies within her relationships to the women in her life, the very important women in her life. The relationship she has with her mother is, like, piercing and extremely cutting. And I feel like a lot of people can relate to that relationship. Like, her mom is a brick wall of, like, no emotion. And Lady Bird is, like, this extremely emotional, look at me kind of character. She's this, like, little girl who just wants to be seen and heard, and she wants to be brilliant. And she's interesting in that she wants to be brilliant, but she kind of isn't, you know? She just has a really good, like, personality. But besides that, she's kind of unlikable until, like, about the middle of the movie. And I think that was done on purpose. So,
right on. Like, honestly, you know, like, I don't expect any teenagers to be, like, spectacular. In fact, I'm really annoyed whenever they make people out to be, like, amazing at 15 or 16. I'm like, calm down, dude. Like,
no, but the thing is, you know, like, even her friend, are average. Yeah, they are average. But even her friend, who's, like, she seems to be average, she's actually making really good grades. She gets the lead in the play. Like, she's just a little bit bigger. You know, she's a thick woman. And I find her more interesting and compelling sometimes than Lady Bird, because Lady Bird is just kind of, like, being annoying everywhere. You know, like.
And that's a point that's kind of made in the movie, like, a couple of times, where they're just like, you know, there's so much value, there's so much talent in this side character. What was her name again? I want to give her that respect.
No, I want to give her that respect, like, too. One second. Julie. Her best name is Julie.
Yeah, Julie. So Julie even says it herself, and other people agree. And, you know, they're like, you know, because of the way I look, I'm not gonna have that part. I'm not. This is, or you know, or the, I'm not. Actually, I'm gonna have that part. She gets like a really good part or whatever.
She's the lead,
but I'm never
role.
Gonna get to live that life. Mm-hmm. Yeah, she's like, I'm never gonna get to have that real life. You know what I mean? Like, this is something that your bitch ass is gonna have because you're tall, skinny, and white. And Julie like just gets to be talented in high school. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know. Yeah, I like that character a lot. I definitely think Julie was.
And
the best character on this fucking movie.
Thank you. And the best relationship in this movie isn't even the one between her and her mother. I mean, that's the most honest relationship, but the best relationship was her and Julie. Because I'm going to probably skip over the mother-daughter part right now because that's a very complicated, fraught with a lot of, you know, emotional things. But the best relationship in this movie and the people I ship in this movie is going to be her and her best friend, Julie. Lady Bird and Julie are inseparable, and they have this kind of relationship that you kind of only have when you're young with someone, you know, like when you're older, everyone's kind of too busy living their lives, but as teenagers you have this extremely intense friendship with someone who just gets you. And a lot of this movie would have been better if it was just centered on them, but I mean, we'll get to that. They go to prom together, dude. And then
that was great.
They take prom pictures together, and honestly the most romantic platonic relationship was theirs. And you know, Lady Bird is trying to date these boys that she thinks, you know, they're and she doesn't even really like them per se. She likes the idea of these boys, like, but she actually really loves her best friend, and their relationship is healthy. They laugh, they joke, they're completely comfortable with each other. And that kind of bond is like rare to be shown in a movie, you know, between two women who are just being themselves, like crying, eating cheese, you know. And I think that's beautiful. Yeah. I think that's a yeah. beautiful relationship. And then I guess the center of this entire movie is about an extremely difficult relationship between Lady Bird and her mother. And I think, you know, the relationship between that kind of mother and that kind of daughter is rare to see, because often we're shown a lot of women, a lot of mothers that are really warm, they're really endearing. And it's not to say that this woman isn't, but she's complicated and she's actually given her layers. Like, I give Greta Gerwig her, like, points. I give her, you know, flowers. Like, she did write a real human woman, and she didn't make her exactly warm. And she didn't exactly make her that, you know, forthright with emotion. That's not what she was. She was a hard woman. And a lot of what's going on is that the mother is experiencing or has experienced what seems to be a lot of trauma. And they're going through like an economic like anxiety in the household because her father's recently lost his job. And so they are already tight with money. And there's this underlying thing throughout the story about, you know, anxiety and depression and economic despair that I think maybe white people began to feel in 2002. And I think maybe that was like a novel concept to white America, or maybe we don't get to see a lot of it in white America. And not that I care about it, but it does matter, you know, like the mom is constantly making like asides to like, are you going to use two towels? Are you going to, you know, you need to work, Lady Bird. You need to go to community college. And, you know, there was some like white suburban shade thrown to community college in there I didn't like. I was like, what? What do you mean? Like, she's going to go to community college and then go to jail. Like, did you remember that part?
I remember the community college part. I don't remember the jail part. No, but yeah, I mean, that was really annoying, like, but that's such a, like, you're right, like, they didn't understand until they had that fall in the economy, like, a lot of white suburban families didn't understand, like, real poverty and what it really means to struggle, like, so many of these things, like, could have been told before Lady Bird, you know, with a Latinx storyline. But it took Lady Bird for them to, like, really look at it, or for the Academy to look at it. Like, that's pretty sad.
It is. And another thing that I found really interesting about the mother is that she's actually, like, And the relationship with that they have with poverty is that Lady Bird is actually kind of cool. She's like, okay, like she doesn't blame anyone. She doesn't have like any hurt feelings that she's poor in that like immediate sense. But it's underneath her because her mother's just kind of hammered it over her head that she's poor. But she goes to private Catholic school, but they're poor. And I found, and she did it out of some sense of like, you know, she wanted to keep Lady Bird safe because in the regular public school, they saw someone get stabbed. And I felt like that was another really white suburban thing to say, you know, like, if you're poor, why would you spend all that money on private school just to keep your kids safe? I mean, I get it, I really do. But if you're that poor where you have to check, you know, the amount of food, you have to check the bill at the grocery store because you don't have enough money, like, that's real. So like, why, you know, there's a lot of like, the mother has like this deep-seated anxiety with money and she's trying to keep everyone afloat. And she's responsible, and there's a lot happening in that underneath that woman, you know, like there's even a point where they're arguing, Lady Bird and her just had this crazy argument about clothes, something very stupid. And then she's like, you know, don't you wish your mother had not, you know, been mean to you once? And then the mother turns to Lady Bird and says, my mother was an abusive alcoholic, and she just walks out of the room. And I was like, whoa,
yeah.
Whoa, what's happening with this lady? Like, and then I begin to understand why she's not able to be, like, emotionally forthright with her daughter. Like, she never tells her daughter that she, like, likes her. She's not a very, like, you know, I'm going to hug my daughter and hold her close and take care of her kind of mom. She's like, look, I provide for you. I cook for you. You live in my house and I do things for you. That's enough. You know, she's not giving her daughter hugs and kisses, and I can identify with that. I can identify with a hard woman. So I thought that was really, really interesting that connection, that there's something underneath her that she wants to be expressive with Lady Bird. You see it at the very end of the movie where Lady Bird is leaving to college and she's unable to like break those walls down and be human with her daughter. She's unable to show her that fear, that anxiety, that sadness that's going on. She can't show her daughter that she has to be strong. And as Lady Bird goes off to college, she doesn't even get out of the car to say goodbye to her daughter. But she has like maybe an epiphany in that loop in the parking lot. And she comes right back and she runs out and she's in tears. And that's the first time you see her mom break. And that, I think that was really, really special. I mean, she didn't say anything to Lady Bird. She didn't catch her in time, but she did catch the father. She did fall into the father for the first time you see her feeling. And I think that was an extremely brave, like, part of the movie. I don't know.
Right on. Yo, I had basically that exact same mom. Like, that was basically my mom, though I guess the one major difference was that my mom didn't have an abusive mother or anything like that. Like, the justification in Lady Bird kind of threw me off. That justification, like, oh, I can be heartless and, you know, but, you know, and show my motherliness through actions. Like, the justification was I had an alcoholic mother. Like, I felt like it was a little unnecessary because, like, my mom had probably the greatest mom in the world. My grandmother was the most amazing woman that I've ever met and probably will ever meet. But my mom was still ended up being, you know, emotionless, you know, I mean, didn't show emotion towards me. Like, she was Lady Bird's mom. Like, mm-hmm. Definitely a few times I wanted to, like, open the door and jump out of a moving car. Definitely happened to me quite a few times.
Who can't relate to that, right?
Right. Like, when that happened, I was just like, wow, like, she did it. She did what I thought about doing 100 times. Yeah, so I didn't like that justification, but I do like that they portrayed a mother like that. I was really surprised to have that part of it anyways, like, to relate to it so much. I was like, wow, like, this white woman is my mom.
Same. Yeah. And like, it's not that like a justification for her. I feel like that was like a little crack in her surface. You know, I feel like there was so much underneath just that line. Like, I feel like that was just a section of something that was happening with her. I feel like there was so much that happened in her life that she cannot express. You know, I feel like that was the one thing that she accidentally let out. Because there's another very, very heartbreaking scene in the movie that I you know, I cry like a little girl at the end of this, because the mother, unable to talk to her daughter, writes all of these letters out, you know. She writes like 6 or 7 letters and she crosses things out and does, and, you know, she balls them up and throws them away, and she's like, oh. But the real thing about that, the real issue, the real point of it is that she felt like Lady Bird was going to judge her grammar. She felt like her own daughter was going to judge her because maybe she had some kind of insecurity about not being smart enough, and she thought maybe Lady Bird was gonna be a smartass. And, you know, the father being in between these two very interesting, strong willed women had to send that letter to Lady Bird and say, hey, look, she tried, but this is why she was insecure. And I feel like that's another crack in her foundation, another thing about her that, you know, the mother is, there's just so much underneath this, like, she's hardened for a reason. And I think not just the alcoholic mother thing, I think there's a lot of trauma there, and that Lady Bird can sense it, but there's nothing that she can do. You know, she's trying to reach out to her mother, but she's just unable. And I feel like a lot of people can relate to that relationship. And I thought it was, honestly, you know, this movie portraying a hardened mother like that, and then having, you know, depression and anxiety and economic anxiety to be the underlining theme below everything, underneath the relationships. It was about depression. Like, her father was going through depression. Her best friend was going through depression. Like, a lot of people were actually sad in this movie. And it all had to do, oh, and I don't know if it all had to do, but a lot of it was about economic anxiety. So that's my spiel on it. And I want to give this movie, like, maybe 3.5 to 4 pan dulces. Like, it's a hard, I love this movie. Like, I don't love it more than Real Women Have Curves, but I think there's a lot to be said about a different kind of woman and a different kind of mother and a different kind of mother-daughter relationship. And they don't have to be Latina for me to relate, because I can see humanity in all things. But I would prefer to it have been two Latinas having that conversation. And I want a hardened Latina mom to be, you know, shown and portrayed, because not all Latina moms are going to be like, you know, let me sana sana culita de rana de todo y te voy a hacer, you know, this and that. No, some women are just hardened, and that's just who they are. And I like when women are shown as true beings, even if they have to be white. But it was still pretty good.
It was a really good movie. I would probably say, like, just maybe it's just like you said earlier, it's kind of hard to give it a rating, because, like, certain parts of it, like Julie, like the mom, you want to be like, no cafecitos, but yeah. Then other parts, like, this girl is just whining about nothing, and you want to be like, 10 cafecitos, like, to put up with your shit, you need yes. that many cafecitos.
She's just so mediocre. She's so mediocre.
Mediocre is the wrong word. I think she's just an annoying teenager, and I think that can be okay. And the fact that she's the lead is kind of weird. I think it works for this movie, because you're seeing it through her lens. You're seeing these other people through her lens. And then it ends up kind of not necessarily being about her. I don't know.
True. I get that. I get that point, that she's just an annoying teenager that towards the end. And, oh, one thing, an aside, because it is actually to do with our podcast. She's actually a really good queer ally. That's when I started to find her not annoying anymore.
Yes.
Her, so she dated...
They kind of subverted a trope.
Yes, they did. She dated
like, oh, okay. Right, and then normally they're like, wow, why do all the good guys have to be gay and all this other shit? But she was just like, she understood. She's like, yeah, my life is hard, but, like, wow, this dude's gonna go through it, you know what I mean? Like, he's gonna fucking go through it, like, hard.
Yeah, and so in that moment, I appreciated
that, even though it was a little tropey, but it kind of went back for a second.
No, and she did. Like, that's, you know, queer allyship 101. Like, hold your friend because they're breaking down and crying and being honest with you, and put your shit to the side because they're being really, really brutally honest with you and vulnerable. So just be a good human being. And that's what she was. So props to her. That's when she started to be, like, an interesting, good character. From that point down is when I liked her. But before that, I was like, shut up.
Yeah. And then also another side note, Timothy from Call Me By Your Name was in this, and he plays, like, this player, artsy fartsy dude, and I just thought that was, and, like, the reason that I wanted to bring this up is because recently, like, Tyler, the creator, like, openly, like, hit on the dude, and I just thought that was the greatest thing.
Oh, yeah, like, straight up, didn't he put him in a song? Didn't he mention him in a song? I was like, damn, bro.
I don't know about all of that.
He was like, Timothy Chalamet, get at me, bro.
I don't know. I thought it was just a tweet. But yeah, I just thought that was super funny.
Yeah, and he's just like a pretentious rich white boy who's annoying as fuck. So, as is so many characters.
But he was still a little bit woke. He was like, dude, you're going to have so much meaningless sex in your life.
That was his look. That was the highlight of everything he ever said, by the way. Because he was problematic.
Yeah, he was definitely just like a tool for like to further her storyline, which is kind of cool, you know what I mean?
Like, no, not just that. I feel like that like popular girl were supposed to be representations of why she wanted to get out of Sacramento. Like, she wanted to escape these like voids, these human voids, you know, like these deep abysmal holes of nothing. Whereas she thought that was the only thing that Sacramento was. And then when she goes to New York, she realizes Sacramento is her mom. Sacramento is her family. Sacramento, she loved it. And, you know, did you see that opening quote by Joan Didion? I was like, yes, this is my kind of movie because I love Joan Didion, even though she was such a dickhead. It was like, you don't understand California hedonism until you've spent a summer in Sacramento. Something like that. And I was like, word. I forgot Joan Didion was from Sacramento. Shout out to, you know, that little thing there.
That's interesting. My roommates, like, I'm home alone right now, and my roommates are in Sacramento. So it's
funny. Really? Hey. Shout out to Sac.
They love it. They go up there a lot. Sacktown. That is unfortunate.
Yep.
Okay, well, let's get into the movie that a lot of us have a lot to say about.
Ooh, I'm excited to hear your take on it.
I had to, you know, I kind of wish I had gave myself more time to sit on it, but I definitely have a lot to fucking say.
There's like, so much.
There's a lot to say. There's
so much, dude.
This movie, I mean, Real Women Have Curves, this came out in 2002, right? Like, a long time ago, but I watch it today like I'm watching Lady Bird, you know what I mean? Like, it's completely watchable, like, without a doubt. It was directed by Patricia Cardoso and written by Josefina Lopez. Fucking dwell on that line real quick. Dwell on the line that two Latinas wrote and directed it.
Two, y'all.
How often do you fucking hear that? Like, these names, Patricia Cardoso, Josefina Lopez. Like, Josefina. Let it burn into your brain. Like, but yeah. I love that. I love that it's for us by us, you know what I mean?
Phobo forever.
The writer, Josefina, she talks about how writing this film was, I guess, maybe like cathartic or something like that. It helped her after, you know, she was undocumented for 13 years. And there's, you know, being undocumented, there's a lot of dehumanization that comes with it. And it's really fucking hard. So she's like, this movie, writing a story about like a woman who lives in East LA, who's a Latina, without that anxiety of like being dehumanized, like in fact it's very humanizing, like that was just the reason that she wrote this film, you know what I mean? So I thought that was dope. And then layered on top of that was her like feelings about being this person who kept being told like, oh, you're talented, oh, you can do this, like you're great, but you're overweight, people won't cast you, this and that, you know what I mean? Yeah, so I mean, like, that adds another layer of like how special this movie is to me now, because it's just like, fuck, same, you know what I mean? Like, people always look at people that are round, people that have like like more meat on their bones or whatever, however you want to like say it, like they always look at us like we can achieve less, you know what I mean? Like, they look down on you just automatically because of the way that you look, and it's bullshit. And she made this movie that's way better than fucking Lady Bird, so fuck you, Academy. She's amazing. Okay, my spiel is finished. I'm sorry.
Oh, okay. Sorry, I'm just making sure. No, yeah. So what was your favorite scene from the movie?
So many. I'm actually just going to do an overview of like what the movie's about, and then I'm going to get real spoilery. So in case you guys don't want to have this 16-year-old movie spoiled for you, safe.
Right. That you should have seen, America by Ferreira, the way.
I mean, I am guilty of not having seen it soon enough, so I understand. But yeah, it stars America Ferreira as Anna, back when she was like hella thick. She was around 17, 18 when this was filmed. She was super new. Like, she had just done that Disney movie, fucking cheer, that cheerleading movie. I forgot what it's called, but she had just done that. So she, that's pretty much the biggest and only credit that she had on her at the time. And she got cast in this movie and she was perfect for this movie. So shout out to Superstore, because I fucking love that show, and she now stars Superstore. In it, and she's no longer like super thick or anything, but you know, she's beautiful no matter what.
She's been beautiful, dude. Yeah, always. So, no matter what body shape.
I know, always, especially in this movie. And yes. This movie is about so many things, right? It's about women living in East LA. It's a coming of age story. It's about a mother and a daughter's complex relationship, and it shows people that the line that Mexican American women kind of walk with when it comes to their cultures, and it's kind of like a more positive alternative to not your perfect Mexican daughter, which was way more tragic. So, I mean, I think when it comes to the sisters in this movie, Ana and Estela, it's very not your perfect daughter, because one of the daughters is completely ceding to the mother and just kind of like doing as she says and trying to be the perfect Mexican daughter, whereas Ana is completely, she's the younger sister, and she's completely like against it. She's like, I'm not gonna just fall into line, you know what I mean? Like, it's very much like that scene in Beauty and the Beast where she's like singing through the town and she's like, there must be more to this provincial life. Very pretentious and like privileged, but you know what I mean? Like, it's relatable, I guess, to an extent. You know, you don't want to just like do what your parents say. Like, who the fuck wants to do what their parents say?
I mean, I feel like she's just a lot more like vocal and self-aware in a way that maybe her older sister didn't have the opportunity to be, you know, because she was the first one.
Possibly, yeah. I mean, this is just how she is at first. I think that she definitely evolves through the film. But yeah, now I'm going to start like really getting into what happens during the story. So get ready.
Spoiler alert.
That are listening. It's not even super spoilery. Like, I think this is a watchable movie no matter how much you talk about it. But yeah, so at the beginning of the movie, Anna's mom tries to guilt her into like staying home and taking care of the house and feeding the men and all this other shit, because she's feeling ill. She's feeling, you know, she's not feeling great. But you find out like this is her last day of high school, period. It's her last day of senior year. And Anna's like, I'm not missing my last day of fucking school just because, you know what I mean? Like, you want me to like cook and clean or whatever. And then the mom, who's like laying in bed, and at first you think like, okay, she's like really like sick, like something's wrong. But then she, like, as soon as like Anna gets a little bit of an attitude, the mom like gets up and she's like, all of a sudden she's fine enough to like, you know, get on her ass about it. And you're like, suddenly, okay, so the mom's just being dramatic. Yeah. I mean, in this movie, it's kind of like, you know, like we were just talking about, it is a lot about the complicated relationship between a mother and a daughter. I guess one of the major differences is that Ana is like not a like conventionally like whatever skinny, and she's not satisfied. She's also not satisfied with the life that she lives, and both of these things just annoy the shit out of her mom. Her mom does not want her to like try to do something else. She doesn't want her to be overweight or whatever. Like, she's like, no, like, you need to lose weight. You need to go work for at the factory.
Oh, that's too real, dude. Like, being body shamed and being told to work every day, every day.
Like, pretty much. And so Ana graduates, and of course, like, this is the one thing that was a little odd to me, but like instead of being encouraged, like, hey, pursue a higher education, which was a kind of a big thing, and pretty much my family and most of the Latino families that I've come across is like, pursue a higher education. This is why we're here. But in this case, they were like, you can go to college later. Like, we need you to work right now. It was different. And she, like, you can tell she's just kind of like going through it and shit. Cause like, she lies to her classmates about like going backpacking through Europe and shit, which like her family can't afford that. She doesn't have that privilege. Yeah. And like, that got me thinking in my head, like, you know, probably whenever I graduated high school, I was totally like, oh, I want to go backpack through Europe. But now that I'm older, I'm like, I want to go like travel through Mexico, like fuck Europe. Like, I'd rather just go all the way through Mexico and like fucking see all the beautiful parts of it that I never got to explore. So even now, I think I would go to Mexico before I went to Europe. But yeah, that was just a side note. So Ana quits her like Yeah. Anna quits her crappy job and she goes to her little graduation party. And, like, this is one of the first times that, like, you hear her mom, without shame, without even hesitation, like, make a comment about her size. And she's like, somebody offers her cake or something like that. And she's like, are you crazy? Like, she's bigger than the cake. Like, blah, blah, blah. Oh, like, she's, like, talking shit about. Hurt. Yeah. It's lame. It's fucking lame. But it's real. But, yeah, Anna's mom, like, because she's, like, the chisme, like, queen, finds out that Anna, quit her job. And she's like, okay, tomorrow, like, literally she just graduated. She's like, tomorrow you're going to go work for your sister, Estela, at the factory making dresses. And even though, like, George Lopez, who's randomly in this movie, is her teacher, and he comes by the house. And he's like, dude, you guys need to let her go to college. Like, she's a really bright student. She got herself into this Beverly Hills school that's, like, super prestigious and hard to get into. And you guys need to, like, let her continue. You know what I mean? Like, she did all this work. You shouldn't let it go to nothing. But her family's just like, we've discussed this between the family. We need her to work right now. Like, this is what we need. And, yeah, that's it. So, up until this point, I'm, like, not happy with Anna's mom. I'm like, wow, okay, you're being a bitch. But I finally, like, get the sympathy when, like, she goes to work at the factory with her mom, her sister, and a bunch of other Latina women. And her mom, like, or she, like, she fucks up on the job on the first day, and she, like, runs out. Her mom runs after her, and her mom, like, you know, she's older, and she, like, starts, like, having trouble breathing and all that sort of stuff. And she, like, stops and she helps her mom. And her mom starts talking about all the physical ailments that she has from, like, having worked so long. She's like, I'm losing my vision from sewing. My hands have arthritis from all this little work and all kinds of stuff. Like, there's a lot of, you know what I mean? Like, after 30 years, like, yeah, your body's gonna, like, be break hurting down like a motherfucker if you're doing, yeah. And that's something that a lot of our parents, like, that was relatable for me. Like, my mom also has, like, knee issues and stuff like that. Like, she has a bunch of problems because of physical labor, which our parents often have to do. They can't just sit in an office or shit like that or whatever. But yeah, so that was when I finally got some sympathy for Anna's mom because I'm that bitch.
No, I don't know if I had, like, sympathy for her mom, but I like immediately saw this woman and thought of, like, my tías. I thought of, like, probably my abuela. I thought of, like, all the Mexican women I know in my life who want these daughters to take care of them, because that's what good Mexican daughters do, is that they don't go to school. They just stay home, take care of their family. Education is not that important. Like, I've seen this happen to my tías. I've seen, you know, the women in my life have been treated this way, that they weren't, you know, if they had to work, they had to work around children, or they had to work, you know, in sweatshops, but to always center it around the family. And I think, like, that made me really mad, because I just, it makes me mad. Like, I see that happen to women in the Latinx culture, is that women get treated as if they are unable to work and take care of, you know, themselves. That self-care is not a concept in the Latinx community.
Yeah, which later on I'll bring this up, but it's funny that, like, it's a very machismo thing. It comes from, like, generally from machismo, that women have to do all this stuff and sacrifice so much. But the people enforcing it, especially in this movie, are the women, not the men. So it's, like, machismo through the women. Like, so it's a crazy cycle.
Internalized, yeah, so self-loving.
Later on, yes, exactly. So later there's a scene where, just briefly, I noticed this, that the mom is talking to another woman in the house, and she, like, gives off, she talks about giving up on Estela, who's the older sister. She's like, I'm not gonna be able to marry her off. Like, it's never gonna happen. I have to focus on Anna. I have to make her get married or get her a good husband. Like, that's the future she sees for her daughter, like, marrying them off. And so, like, a side note from that shit, like, honestly, Estela was gay as fuck. Like,
yes, I feel like
she really was. Like, she had zero interest in men. She, like, cared so much about women empowerment, like, didn't mention them for 1 second. And her aesthetic,
her lesbian soft witch aesthetic.
Yeah. So I don't know, like, I just think that, and especially the way that her mom kind of gives up on her, like, I was like, fuck, I wonder if my mom thinks that. Like, she just sits there and she's just like, I mean, obviously I'm not gonna get no kids out of this bitch, but I don't know.
Like, you disappointed her.
Estella's such an interesting character. I mean, I don't know, like, at the same time, like, I think a long time ago I told my mom, I was like, I want to have kids, and she's like, no, you're not having any kids, blah blah blah. Like, my mom was kind of the opposite of this woman. She, like, wanted me to focus on my career. She never wanted me to be gay, but she also didn't want me to, like, go off with, like, and get pregnant or anything.
Don't,
like,
ruin
she
didn't your want life that don't for get me. Pregnant, and you're like, not a problem, mom, gotcha.
Yeah.
You took that a yeah, little I was just like, step sure further, God. We both did.
No, but yeah, she did, like, yeah. But I did tell her, like, I wanted kids, and it's true, I do, but she was just like, no. She was upset.
Damn.
Yeah, so finally, like, I think Anna had kind of at the beginning of the movie been kind of like, yeah, I'm gonna have to get a job, I'm not going to college. But she kind of, like, she goes to work in the factory for a couple of days, and she's like, you know what, maybe I should go to college. So she decides to, like, give it a try. But she's, I guess she's, like, a little uninformed about it, and, like, this is where George Lopez steps in and, like, helps her out and shit. So, because she's all like, okay, here's an application, and he's like, you gotta write an essay. She's like, what the fuck, an essay? so that becomes kind of a semi-plot point. And during, like, her little visit to George Lopez, she runs into this, like, privileged white guy, Jimmy, who for some reason is, like, super interested in her. Do you remember Jimmy?
Yeah, I do. But why not be interested in America Ferrera? Come on.
Oh, yeah, for sure. But I was like, look, I guess maybe because of everybody been comparing it to Lady Bird, I was like, this boy is up to something. Like, I don't trust him. But he ended up, like, not being, like, a shit character. He was just kind of there. What happens after that is at the factory, the star, the number one employee, the one that, like, kind of does the best work for Estella, she's getting married, so she has to, like, leave early, and her sister and her mom also work at the factory, so they're all going with her. So Estella immediately loses half her staff, and she, like, needs all the help she can get. So shit goes into, like, crisis mode. And low-key, that scene, too, where Estella is, like, saying goodbye to Norma, the girl that's leaving to go get married, I was like, okay, so she was in love with Norma, and she's, like, super sad that she's leaving.
Whoa, I'm wait, like, the one that's getting married?
Yeah.
She was hot.
That's just me and my gay ass. Okay. No, but, like, she, I don't know, just the way that she was, like, super sad and, like, looking through the window, she's like, oh, like, all lusty and shit like that. Like, I get having anxiety about, like, getting these dresses made, but, like, straight up, she was looking at her like she lost the love of her life. So, aww, shout out, man, to whoever acted for Estella.
That's sad.
But yeah, so this is where Anna's opinion on, like, the entire workforce that her sister and her mom are a part of kind of comes into play, and it becomes kind of like a perfect example of how, like, Mexican Americans, when we go off and get educated and Americanized, like, we lose the vision of, like, of the life that they have to live. You know what I mean? Like, we see the corporations and how they abuse factory workers, which is great, but we forget that we have to value those workers anyways. They themselves, like, you know, they have to value themselves in some way, even though they're being abused by these corporations. They have to find some sort of value in their work. They have to, like, you know, not feel looked down upon, you know what I mean? Like, they have to live these lives, so they're, you know, how are they going to just sit there all day long trying to make a living and then be thinking, wow, I'm getting abused? Like, no, they're going to think, like, I'm going to do a good job. You know what I mean? Like, I'm going to value my work because that's how you have purpose in life. That's how you keep going.
They had a lot of pride in making
it. So
their
I thought
work,
it was kind of, you know? They really did. And I like that because it's not like Anna was wrong. Like, yeah, it's fucked up that they get paid $18 for these dresses and Nordstrom sells them for $600. But at the same time, like, you can't just be putting down these workers who have to use their hands and spend and sweat in these shops to make these dresses. Like, they have to feel valued. They have to feel good about themselves, too.
No, yeah, the movie had a really good point.
So,
of
I like that it wasn't
dignity.
So black and white.
Yeah, no, and the movie really, like, humanized and gave dignity to, like, sweatshop workers or, you know, factory workers, which, oftentimes are women that we know and love. And so that was beautiful in that way that, like, you know, these are people I know, people you know. Like, we all know someone who makes vestidos and they get paid shit, but they acknowledge the beauty and the artistry that it takes to make something that freaking beautiful, you know? Like, it's not, it's made from the hands of these wonderful women, you know? That's beautiful.
Right, I agree. I'm looking through my notes and this is what I put.
What? Like,
probably verbatim. Let me just fucking read it out. Because after all that, I put, then it gets real straight for a minute, but it's irrelevant to the story. Parentheses. She has a date with Jimmy.
You ignored that part too, right?
I just, like, don't I give a fuck about it. I just didn't. It's fine. Like, she should be able to, like, do her thing. But I was just, like, not interested. But yeah. Anyways, finally, Anna starts learning about, like, how difficult it's been, like seeing it firsthand, how difficult it is for her parents to make a living. And she finds some motivation to write her little essay. She's like, what is writing a little essay in comparison to, like, the hard work that my parents do?
Mm.
So, once again, like, the professor, who's like, just wants to be overly involved in her life, which is fine, I guess, he comes to their house after she's turned in this essay and George tells Lewis. The family, like, she was accepted to Columbia with a full scholarship. And her parents are like, fuck that. Like, it's all the way in New York. Like, her dad's been super supportive and, like, you know, but he's like, New York? Like, are you fucking kidding me? Like, you can't go to New York. Like, we're a family. We stick together. That's what we do. So that was cool. But yeah, this is kind of a point where I guess we can talk about the similarities or anti-similarities to Lady Bird. I've just jotted down some notes. Like, for one, moving from California to New York was just, like, an implausible thing. People were just like, what are you? Are you crazy? Like, that's a lot.
I mean, in 2002, the father that was
portrayed
crazy.
As, like, kinder. Yeah. The father was, like, a lot kinder. He was understanding, like, much more than the mother. And in this particular case, it's because machismo is translated through the mother's aggressions. Whereas, like, they didn't touch on that so much in Lady Bird. This definitely adds another layer to real women have curves.
No, and real and women had curves. Like,
the other one,
it's cultural. Like, that, like, machismo is a cultural thing. It's totally normal in our culture, you know. And Lady Bird, I don't know what gringo culture is, but it's another separate thing. But you know, real women have curves. It's like, no, that's super serious. Like, you have to be perfect. You have to be virginal. You have to be skinny, but not too skinny, because then they're going to feed you more. You have to be religious. You have to be, you know, ni santas ni putas. Like, that whole thing comes from that, like, identity, like, that you can't be a saint, but they want you to be, and also to take care of literally everyone.
Right. I mean, speaking of gringo culture, the dad, I mean, and a lot of the people in this were allowed to be depressed. They were allowed to be unemployed, you know what I mean? They had that, you know, like you said, self-care doesn't exist sometimes in our culture. And, like, you know, if the dad got depressed or if the mom got depressed, they were still gonna go to work. There wasn't a choice there,
not an option.
Whereas in Lady Bird, like, right, in Lady Bird, there kind of was. So that's a huge difference too. The other things that I have down is, like, in both cases the mom is super critical, but they think they're being helpful. And maybe in a way they kind of are, but also really not. I think in Lady Bird's case, the mom was kind of helpful a lot of the times, but also not. Yeah, in both cases, the moms were, like, just super critical.
But, you know, they're critical in their cultural ways. You know, like, one of them was, like, you know, like, my tía. Like, she was, like, talking about novelas. She was talking about, like, you know, old tales that are, like, passed down in tradition. And, you know, a lot of her ideas were very antiquated about what women were supposed to do in society, like a woman's role, you know, and her body shaming. And then there was this beautiful scene where each of them in the sweatshop, because it's too hot, just completely takes off their clothes. And it's a very interesting moment because they start to compare their, like, stretch marks. And then it gets super real when Anna looks at her mom and she goes, what's that scar? And she's like, this is from giving birth to you. And then you suddenly bring it back to not just body shame, but to how beautiful and how women's bodies are, you know, given up to give birth to us. And that's another very beautiful thing. And a very, you know, it happens. Women's bodies get scarred because of childbirth. And I felt like that was another really revolutionary moment in the movie.
Yeah, I was gonna get to that in just a moment, but like, yeah, it's, there's definitely like the quote literally that America Ferrera says. She's like, "We're all women. We all have the same things." Whenever she takes off her shirt, because she's fed up with like being, you know, sweating her ass off, and like immediately, like her mom, like, radar goes off. Her mom comes by and like fat shames her. She's like, "Shit, aren't you embarrassed of how you look and all this other shit?" And then like, Anna takes it as like a moment and like literally goes through and empowers every single woman in that, you know, of different shapes and sizes in that sweatshop, which is her sister and like some other coworkers, and all of them are like talking about how no matter what, like they have felt some insecurities, and Anna is just like, no, like, fuck that, you know what I mean? Like, Anna's like self, like her confidence was like something so refreshing, you know what I mean? Like, she was just like, fuck it, and like starts taking off her clothes, and everybody starts taking off their clothes, and the mom never like really gives in to Anna's thoughts, you know what I mean? Mm. Like, no matter, like, she doesn't, she's the only one that doesn't like take off her clothes. And by the way, I really love that this movie made it so that like it wasn't like a like sexualized at all. Like, this was purely about empowerment. Like, this was just completely, like, it was funny, it was relatable, it was honest, and it was great. And none of it was just, like, sexualizing anybody. And I love that. It wasn't for men. You know what I mean? Like, clothes was taken off, and it was not, like, for the male gaze, and that's great.
No, if anything, like, so, Anna had, like, a lot of sexual agency in this movie. Like, she, you know, was very, like, you know, I'm going to buy, you know, condoms before I go decide to do this thing. And it's definitely a decision that she makes. No one's pressuring her. She feels ready. And, you know, she's not, like, clingy. She's just like, look, I just want to do this. We don't have to stay together. We're going to live our separate lives in New York. I don't need you. You don't need me. I just want to do this. And she's very, like, positive. He tries to turn off the lights during the act, and she turns it on. She's like, no, I want you to see me. Like, and this is her in the whole movie. That's what I...
that scene was so weird.
Dude, like, the thing with it is, yeah, that, it was, you know, when I said, yeah, that, like, Lady Bird was mediocre and that homegirl was, like, exemplary, because she is, because look at all this self-love she has. Look how she got into this Beverly Hills school, she got into Columbia, even applying late. Like, this girl is actually extraordinary. There's a scene where her and her sister meet with the corporate company she's vending for. They meet with her boss, and she speaks up before her sister does and says, look, we need money to pay the bills to make the dresses that you buy from us, so you can give us that money or you cannot get this product. Like, she put it down. Like, I was so proud of her.
I was too, but like at the same time, she, in that moment, I think what was more relevant, or what came off as more relevant in that particular moment, was the fact that that woman who was working, who Estela was working for, was also a Latina who had like, who like immediately is super quick to say like, oh, you know, I felt like I should give you this opportunity, and like I stuck my neck out for you, you know what I mean? Like, kind of acting like she's doing it out of pity or out of like guilt,
and not that these, you know, dresses, I mean, are like, actually, oh, beautiful,
like, you don't even deserve this, I'm doing it right. So it's bullshit, like, because even Estela said, like, the reason that we get hired is because of the quality of our work. She said it earlier in the movie. So that was another thing that, like, it was, like, levels. It was, like, Estela, who's, like, just down to earth. And then Anna, who's a little in the clouds or whatever, but she gets it. And then there was that woman who had just kind of gone, like, beyond, who was just, like, oh, she's basically gone to the level of, like,
she's in the
whiteness
sunken place.
Where she... Yeah, so she had gotten to that level where she was just, like, oh, yeah, I'm taking pity on you. I don't know. It was definitely an important scene in that way to me. And then, like, I guess the last thing that I really want to talk about in Real Women Have Curves is how Anna asking her father for a loan to help out Estela, even though, my, like, heart, he's always taught them to be like, to, you know, not take loans, you know what I mean? If you don't have the cash up front, don't ask for it, type of thing. And basically her asking for that loan and him giving her that loan was her asking him to take a risk on her going and pursuing an education instead of just working, which, you know, working is a sure thing. Getting an education is a risk. And then her being able to pay that loan back was her saying, like, I can do this. You know what I mean? Like, you can take this risk and it will pay off. And so that sort of metaphor there was really special, I think, between her and her dad, and getting, you know, being somebody that they can invest in.
No, that was really cute.
For sure. And it's getting fucking like late. We have a lot to say, but definitely you guys, if you have more to add to this, tweet us, DM us, email us, etc. Well,
tell us how much, we're at CYC Podcast on MS, almost everything. Would give Real Women Have Curves?
None.
I give it 5 pan dulces. Go
none,
watch it, y'all.
None. I would give it, I give it 2 Dos Equis.
So that's 4? 4 Equis.
4 Equises, yeah. Damn, guys. I, like, tuckered myself out. We're about to go live on Instagram. We're late to go on live. But tweet us as well if you want us to go live again, etc. Blah, blah, blah. I don't know if you guys are liking the Instagram lives. And we have a couple of Patreon shout-outs to do if you want to.
Okay, cool. You can go first.
All right, so shout out once again to our Patreon supporters. You guys have stuck around for like 3 months already. That's amazing. We love you. You've gotten our extra Guillermo del Toro episode. You've gotten our extra or our redo. And then this month you're getting, what are you getting this week?
What are they getting?
Oh, you're getting a never released episode, like where we talk about TV shows that only lasted one season.
Oh, yes.
And we're not going to release that to everybody, but yeah, Patreon supporters are going to get to hear what we think about, I believe, 4 shows that didn't last more than a season and maybe why they were canceled. So we talk about that.
Yay.
And the first Patreon supporter that I'm going to say what's up to is going to be Noel from High on Life Podcast, who recently started doing episodes again and releasing episodes again. So check her out, Heil on Life. A shout out to Noelle, you're the best.
And then sorry, I also want to shout out Raciel Camargo. What's up Pimpin, we see you and we love you, you're awesome, you make me feel cool.
I love your aesthetic, it's fucking right. Dope.
His Instagram is lit.
Yeah. And then shout out once again to Alicia from the Land Down Under. What's up Australia, let's talk some more, let's chat, hopefully we get to see each other at some point in life. Thank you for being a Patreon supporter.
Shout out Marimar.
You got Marimar.
Yeah, I gotta meet her, gotta eat with her, she's really really dope, her and her homegirl. And I'll take you to a better sushi spot next time. I did too. Oh, and then I want to shout out Bae. Thanks Bae, I see you.
There we go. All right. And of course, like we said, like we're gonna be doing shit, we're gonna be doing more current episodes. To keep up with all that, we have cabronasychingonas.com, your one-stop
yes,
shop.
Yes, hit up
everything.
That website.
We have show notes on there, so if we talked about random shit on this episode that you want to link to, it's probably gonna be there. And if you want to request it, you can always email us at cycpodcastmail@gmail.com, or you can tweet us or Instagram us or DM us at cycpodcast. You can Facebook us at facebook.com/cycpod. And we are on Spotify now. Yes. Yeah, so I mean, that way you don't have iTunes like filling up your megabytes on your iPhone.
Yes, just listen to us on the Spotify.
And I'm going to be at Klexicon, probably going to have a little travel mic there so we can do some like on-site interviews and shit like that. So if you guys see me, get yourself a sticker, get yourself a high five or whatever. And we can like chat and go to panels together and fangirl together and hang out in Las Vegas. And it's going to be fucking dope.
Yeah. I'm so jealous. Have fun in Vegas. Like that sounds amazing.
When this the day that this episode comes out, like that evening, I don't know, like maybe if you guys tweet us enough, like maybe we'll jump on the Instagram live again and talk to you guys about this particular episode. I'll be like on the way to Las Vegas, so I'll just jump on, you know, on the road. See if I get some reception
in the desert.
If you're down, Fabrita.
I'm super down.
All right, sweet. So yeah, if you guys want us to do a live, let us know. Always follow us, always, as always, review and rate us, like that's helping out a lot. Like that would be amazing, especially now that we're on the Spotify.
Yes, shout us out, por favor, get a sticker, we love y'all.
Tell your friends about us, tell your mom about us,
tell your cousin, tell your abuelita.
And we have some really cool, like I said, very current episodes coming up. I know that we've had a lot of we haven't had an episode like this in a long time where it's just me and you talking about a movie and a TV show where it all began.
Yeah. So I'm super excited.
So you're welcome.
But yeah, so yeah.
But yeah, become a Patreon supporter. That'll help us with paying for this website and paying for us to continue without like falling deeper into the hole. Yeah. And if you want to meet up in LA, hit me up. If you want to meet up in Dallas, hit Fred Papita up. She's at Fred Papita on Twitter.
Yes, thank you. And you're at Mighty Panda.
And I'm at I'm at MYTE Panda on Twitter. That's mostly what I use. And yeah.
Later, Gators.
Bye, guys. Thank you for listening.